The biggest story in the hockey world, and obviously the sad news of the passing of the legendary Bob Cole yesterday. To talk about his legacy, a legend in his own right, from Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, we say good morning to Ron McLean. Ron, good morning. How are you?
Hey, George and Matt. You should know Bob, in addition, he was the most interesting man in the world, and maybe I'll tell you a story of, in a bit about Chris Cuthbert. Looking at Bob one night at dinner in 1988 and wondering what it takes to become the next Bob Cole, and he realized he didn't have it. Although he did become kind of the next Bob Cole, this Bob is the most interesting man in the world, and among his titles was owner of a capelin fishery in St. John's, Newfoundland. He had there are these little fish that come ashore usually in late June, so just after the Stanley Cup playoffs, and they're very popular in Asia. So he had that on the side on the go. But just chills to hear him call Andy Scull.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that 89 Cup, one of his many great performances, but I recall Gilmore got the next goal, and Bob in the third period said there was a shot of the referee, Denny Morrell, and he said, as Calgary was heading to a power play, he said, "This is a chance for Calgary to really put this one away." And 18 seconds later, it was in the net. And he had unreal anticipation to go along with his majestic voice.
Well, Ron, of course, you talk about being the most interesting man. He was also a very accomplished curler on top of being the voice of hockey.
Well, that was the thing that Chris Cuthbert. So the story is, we're in Boston to do a game, and Chris is actually en route to New Jersey. I believe it was to New Jersey to do updates while we did a game in Boston. But he joined us for dinner at the Cambridge hotel we were staying in across the Charles River, and starts with hockey talk, and of course is Bob. So we're all glued to every word Bob is saying. I'm young then too. And then it moved over to the World Curling Championships, the Silver Broom. And that's when Bob explained to Chris that he was twice in the Brier and twice in the Canadian Mixed Curling Canadian Championships. So Chris is starting to feel a smidge inadequate. And then we got on to our flights, and Bob started talking about the descent into Logan Airport that day. And Bob's a certified pilot, and he went on about the angle of the aircraft and how he approached the runway, and it was an indication that they'd been cleared early for a landing, because ordinarily you wouldn't turn that sharp. All these things. So Cuthbert's eyes are getting wider and wider, and next thing we look out at the Charles River, and there's a bunch of rowers going by, and Bob explains that he's a provincial champion in sculls. You know, it was like there was nothing Bob hadn't done and couldn't do, and Chris Cuthbert's thinking, okay, forget it.
That's incredible. Ron, when was the first time you met Bob Cole?
Well, it would have been my rookie year. So for me at Hockey Night in Canada, I don't think I intersected Bob when I did the Flames on 2-7. I did do a game in Toronto, but I don't believe he did that game, a regional game. So I meet him in 86, 87, and we worked the first playoffs. And I have very vivid memories of going to his hotel room. The routine for us was, we'd all repair to the bar after a game, and usually we'd just make last call. And then I often would go to Bob's room or he to mine, and we would sit and sort of talk about shop. He was incredible. I explained in my book, he was the most disciplined drinker I've ever met. He would pour a tall glass, a Captain Morgan dark rum and Coke, but he wouldn't touch it for like 20 minutes. He'd just be into storytelling. And then after 20 minutes, he'd consume half the glass, set the glass down, and not touch it again for another 20 minutes. You know, meanwhile, 5 minutes into the conversation, I'm looking at the beer fridge, wondering, can I have my next one? But he would share all these great stories. And he said that year, this is 87 playoffs, you know, there were a lot of changes in the air. Carling O'Keefe Breweries was going to join Molson as rights holders, and CBC was beginning to get the idea they wanted to take over production of the show and brand the show a little more CBC than Hockey Night in Canada, which was McLaren Advertising. And Bob said to me, you know, Ron, new brooms must sweep. So don't get too high on your horse and expect this to go forever, because change is inevitable. And, he was really that way for me. He would protect me when I got into trouble. But I remember that. And the other thing I remember is that he liked his window ajar in the hotel room. So all our hotel planning, it was the funniest thing. Grapes was big on saunas, which are really hard to come by in the United States. They don't put them in the hotels for whatever reason. That was his version of a workout, was to go sweat in a sauna for an hour. And Bob's thing was, he was absolutely had to have that you could open the window. He would not stay in a hotel that you didn't. And that was only because he believed that fresh air was good for his lungs and his voice. It wasn't because he wanted to jump out or get out. He just had this notion that an open air, fresh air situation is better for a broadcast voice.
Well, what about on the way to the rink, to and from the hotel? He had to sit in a specific spot in the car,
you
too,
know, he
right?
was the passenger. He was definitely the passenger in the front seat. Yep. So he's a certified pilot, but he definitely, and God, I remember we were going on the, I think it's called the 417, the highway out to Canada in Ottawa, and traffic was brutal, and we were a little bit late, and the routine was always, I drove the rent-a-car, Bob was my, you know, navigator, and in the backseat, Harry and Don, and Bob is telling me to go on the shoulder and go past all the cars on the shoulder of the highway. So he's trying to get me arrested. Me, like a million demerits if I'd listened to him throughout my life. But he was really funny at, you know, go this way and do that. And don't, never mind waving to the guy when you butt in. Just go, you know. And just so fun to be around. Because he had a false temper, is what I would say about Bob. He was pretending to be angry with you all the time and then rolling his eyes and, you know, had a spark in his eye.
What did Foster Hewitt mean to him?
Well, he taught him the four levels of projection, and that's, you know, among his many gifts. I mentioned his anticipation. And remind me to tell you the story about Rob Blake in a second. It's got to do with the Flames in 89, too. But back to Foster Hewitt. So, you know, he had the audacity to go to CHFI radio in Toronto in the 1960s. He walked in with one of his tapes, an audition tape, and he presented it to the receptionist and said, I'd like you to leave this for Mr. Hewitt. And the receptionist picked up the phone and got Foster down to the lobby, and Foster's met Bob and says, well, come on, let's have a listen. So they went into a studio, put on Bob's tape, and he said, you're good, Bob. You're really good. But you tend to be at a bit of a fever pitch too much. You need to learn the four levels of intensity. Level one is conversationless, where you're just explaining we're on the air. It's nice to have everybody with us on a Saturday night. Level two is you're now setting the stage for an important moment in the game. Big face-off, start of a power play. Number three is there's been a hit, a significant hit or a chance. Number four, the top level, you reserve for the big save or the big goal that flips the game. And Bob never forgot those four levels. And he studied his craft. He listened to games. He listened to music, and he watched stage theater. He wasn't so big on – he loved movies, don't get me wrong, but he really loved theater. We would go to Broadway every time we were in New York, and Anything Goes by Cole Porter was his favorite show production. And he kind of visualized himself as a director, not the leading man in the play, but the director of the play, who knew when to breathe, when to play a song, and when to talk. And yeah, just since so Rob Blake, because when the Flames won the Cup, kind of the first shot you see is Rick Walmsley. Bob had a golf tournament in St. John's he ran it for 7 years, started in 1988, and then eventually he kind of handed it off to the American Hockey League Baby Leafs. But while he had the tournament, poor Bob would spend the whole Stanley Cup playoffs trying to coax NHL stars to come down to Newfoundland for 3 days in July to Ballyhaley Golf Club for the tournament. And he phoned me the first year about 48 hours before the event and said, damn it, you know, two guys have canceled. I need to find two more guys. Can you help me out? So I had just been at Rick Walmsley's golf tournament in Simcoe, Ontario. And at that tournament, I met two young college players who were destined to be in the NHL, Nelson Emerson and Rob Blake. They were playing at Bowling Green. So I phoned Bob and I said, good news, Bob. I've got two guys. They're NCAA Division I college guys right now, but they'll be in the NHL this fall. You're going to love them. They're Nelson Emerson and Rob Blake. And there's this silence on the phone. And he says, who the bleep is Rob Blake? And we always laughed about that because he went on to a Hall of Fame career.
How much of that resonate with him when Foster Hewitt would say the United States and Newfoundland at the beginning of his broadcast?
Well, you know your stuff. Yeah, that's everything to him. The fact that Foster said, and Newfoundland, you know, hello Canada and hockey fans in the United States and Newfoundland. And Bob is sitting, it started when he broke his leg playing soccer as a boy and he'd listen to Foster's every word. For 6 months, all he could do was listen to the radio. And that hello to Newfoundland was like so big to Bob because it kind of gave two things really shaped him. That, the fact that, you know, Foster included Newfoundland, and the fact that he grew up at Signal Hill in St. John's, which is that he was at the base of the hill where Marconi received the first electronic transatlantic signal. So he really understood that this was more than a broadcast. It's a bridge to connecting people. And Foster, you know, really both teaching him the levels of projection and teaching him the idea of transporting somebody. It's almost like the Starship Enterprise. You know, he took you from your home and me from mine in Red Deer down to Maple Leaf Gardens or the Forum or wherever the game was. It was really, in fact, when Chris Cuthbert talked about it on NHL.com, I was with him in the car when after the tournament at Ballyhaley. 3 days of stuff has gone on, and now Bob can sort of decompress. So he's having a drink, and he gets in his car with me and Chris Cuthbert, and we drive up to Signal Hill, and he points out where, you know, this is the spot Marconi's signal landed. And he talked about, as we went by the houses on the hill, the Battery, you know, there's somebody in that house. They're sitting down on a Saturday night, and they've got their rum and coke, and it's on their armrest, and they're into the Leafs. And they don't give one flying fadoo about what you have to say about the game or what you think is going to happen in the game. They just want the game. And you give us that speech. He and I would argue a lot about, you know, he would say the game's the thing. And I'd say, yeah, but the show's the thing, too. And he'd say, no, it's not the thing. And at one time we were sort of arguing and he grabbed over. I had some kind of a fancy French designer T-shirt that I was very proud of. And he sort of turned it like he was so strong because of the rowing background or curling background. So he grabbed my T-shirt and he says, you with this silly logo, you know, and he turns it and he tears it. He actually shreds the T-shirt in a heartbeat. And his daughter, Hillary, when I went down to the golf tournament, she presented me at the dinner with a brand new T-shirt to replace the one he wrecked. So he had told the kids about how he had done that. And that's the fun in him, right? He just got such a charge out of the fact that he ruined my shirt.
How important were his kids to him?
Oh, God. He went on and on, and we laughed endlessly about the fact Wayne Gretzky is the most generous heart, and he would always give Bob a stick to bring home to Robbie. So literally, Robbie could have opened a sporting goods store with Wayne Gretzky game-used sticks and made a million. But he loved his four children. Christian's the oldest. Hillary, I always say, was kind of my favorite because she was the one that gave me that T-shirt and kind of understood the fun that we had on the road. Megan followed in his footsteps as a great actor. She attended Ridley College in Ontario, as did the others, and she performed. I went to see her in Jitters. It was a great production. And Robbie was the youngest, and he was a pilot. And, yeah, he talked about them endlessly. They are all just so wonderful. Karen, his longtime partner, the mother of those four, you know, they're a sensational family. And that was, you know, it was tough. He had to leave Newfoundland every Saturday. He would leave on Thursday because you can't trust that the weather won't sort of prevent you from getting to wherever the game is. So he spent a lot of time on the road, but they, you know, they were very supportive and they certainly came to a lot of the games. Last night when we ran a little bit of a tribute piece to Bob, I saw Robbie sitting in behind Bob. Just he's so much the centurion and just like his father.
It's one thing to get to the top of your craft. It's another thing to stay there. And then it's another thing to stay there well into your 70s. What were some of the keys to the longevity of Bob's career?
Well, the passion for it, for sure. The purpose for it, like life for all of us, that was the key. He absolutely thrived on being in the building. And, you know, they showed, again, last night, just a simple thing. Amalie Arena in Tampa. We were doing what we call as a plug and play. So we were actually taking the TNT coverage. So David Amber throws down to the rink and they're not quite ready. The anthem is going. So we have to kind of delay with just a shot of the rink. And it was just a static shot of a building. And I just thought that's, you know, Bob's place that he could bring to life, that he was the battery for that building. He loved the energy of an arena. Again, not him as the leading guy or anything. Just him as the conduit, him as the orchestra conductor that would make it sing. And then he took care of himself. He was a golfer. He wasn't a workout buff by any stretch, but I'm sure, you know, just when we would sit and decompress after the games, I sensed, his ability to kind of chill when it was time to chill and turn it on when it was time to turn it on. And that, you know, he definitely had, he had confidence, but he was a very humble person who was kind of there to serve, and that's the best way I could describe it.
Do you have any stories of him chasing down a proper pronunciation for a player's name? Because
oh my God, yes, that drove us crazy. he drove us crazy because you know somebody in a heavy European accent, Peter Stastny, might say his name in a way that is just unmanageable for us. You know, so and he did that with Fedosov. You know. we used to say Fetisov, and he changed it to Fetisov after talking to Saiva. You know, he was a perfectionist for sure. Grapes told a story of, you know, Grapes had a little routine before the games in Boston where he would shower 50 minutes to game time while the warm-up was on, and then he would get dressed while the players were out doing the warm-up. Bob would come by and say, I need your starting lines. And Bob wrote, I think, one word every 15 minutes. He was so slow in writing things down. He was just really careful to get it exact. And Don's fretting because he's not going to be dressed for the start of the game. And, yeah, he was perfectionist about the lines and extremely – like, he knew that Gretzky'd been traded 4 days before Gretzky was traded from Edmonton to L.A. Glenn Sather told him because Glenn was going to be at his golf tournament and couldn't go as a result of the impending trade.
Wow.
So he always respected every confidence. Nothing was about scoops for TV. And then he, as you said, he chased down pronunciations and, you know, he would always get this, you know, start of the game, I would hear, can I talk to Ron? Can I talk to Ron? You know, I'm hearing him from Maple Leaf Gardens or Wells Fargo Center or wherever the hell he is. And I'm at Toronto doing the playoffs in the atrium of the CBC building. And I can hear this happening online. And finally, hey, Bob, it's Ron. Just one thing. Number eight for the Philadelphia Flyers. How are you saying that? Well, that's not it. It's Recce, you know, I don't know what I said, but he'd tell me to do it a way that I thought I was already doing it and make sure that we got it right. So, and that's kind of his mantra, right? I'm going to keep doing this until I get it right. But when he got it wrong, it wasn't from lack of preparation.
What's your favorite Bob Cole call?
Like you'll hear from so many, but I was thinking with the guys last night, one that I haven't dug out that stands out for me is Patrick Roy in the 1986 playoffs. Montreal's playing Van Beesbrouck and the Rangers, and that's when Roy as a rookie broke out, right? And he made like 10 saves in a sequence in that game. That is my favorite. Haven't heard it in forever. You know, I always say you start with 69, the Béliveau double overtime call in Boston Garden. And you can carry that right on through into the 2010s and Carey Price, which includes the Mario Lemieux and a new bunch on the block and the Lanny McDonald and the Joe Sakic. You nailed it. Longevity, Hemingway said, the key, or, you know, in order to be great, you have to last. And he lasted for 5+ decades, always at the peak of performance.
Ron, this has been absolutely terrific. Thanks for story time. And again, Bob Cole is the voice of hockey for so many of us, and just the way he described the game and the play-by-play, it is seared in our memories forever. Great stuff, Ron. Enjoy the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs, and thanks for taking time out this morning.
Yeah, much appreciated too, George and Matt. Talk to you soon.
There's Ron McLean, Hockey Night in Canada and on Sportsnet, on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Straight ahead, Frank Saravalli, NHL Daily Faceoff, Big Show, Russick and Rose, 960 The Fan. It's a Big Show, Russick and Rose, Sportsnet 960, The Fan, powered by mortgages2go.ca. Always the lowest interest rates. Stop playing the air guitar. You're making me laugh.
Look at Pat hit those power chords.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's Tom Cock.
Yeah, life's a highway. The Big Show is brought to you by mortgages2go.ca. Always the lowest interest rates in Canada since 2004. Visit mortgages2go.ca. Top of the hour.
I saw this song live last weekend.
Oh, okay.
Little Riviera show, the Italian club.
Cover band.
Nice. Return Riviera, 4.5-year hiatus. Oh, boy. Crowd was lit.
Brent Cron, Big Show Flames analyst, top of the hour. We'll also give you the text topic today at 8 o'clock for your chance to win Arkells and tickets to the gold medal game at the World Para Ice Hockey Championships down at Winsport.
You said the Arkells.
Oh, Arkells, sorry.
To win tickets to the show by Arkells.
Yeah, it's always tough.
That sounds so weird.
It does. But right now, our man, NHL insider for Daily Faceoff, Mr. Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Exports. With inventory shortages across the city, it's the perfect time to sell your vehicle for cash. Visit SouthTrailExports.com. Frank, good morning. How are you?
So Maddie was playing the air guitar.
No, Patrick was.
Patrick was. Oh, yeah. Patrick was.
I'm more of a drummer.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm sitting here going, yes, the intro music today is the theme song from Cars.
Yeah.
That's why I said Rascal Flatts, but I'm pretty sure that's the Tom Cochran version.
That was the Tom
But, I mean, that's just dad strength for you right there.
Damn right.
How many times did I see that movie? 1 billion.
Not enough. How about that?
Between that and Monsters, Inc., I can recite every line.
Awesome.
Those are two good movies to have. Like, if those are the ones that your kids are rinsing, like, you made off pretty well.
I did all right.
Yeah.
We just had Ron McLean on before he jumped on, had incredible stories about Bob Cole. I just wanted to ask you, what kind of influence did Bob Cole have down south? Because obviously, you know, not the same, the soundtrack of the game like he was here every Saturday night here in Canada. What was your Bob Cole experience when it comes to the game?
My experience is really odd because there was really no impact. I know this sounds funny to say now, but growing up as a kid, Hockey Night in Canada wasn't available down south. Like, you couldn't just turn on NHL Network and watch the Canadian feed.
Right.
So there was no... I didn't have the experience of having the Bob Cole soundtrack. And when I got to, you know, covering the NHL on a daily basis and then being in Bob Cole's orbit and seeing him at the rink, you could, like, the first thing you could pick up on or picked up on was just the reverence that everyone had for him. And then to go back and sort of, you know, I'm sure it's not different than anyone else that didn't grow up in Canada, to go back and then experience that through clips and the calls and all the highlights, it's incredible.
The way I would explain it to Americans of what Bob Cole means to us, he's like our Vin Scully. That's how I would do it.
Well, I don't think you're even giving him enough credit because Vin Scully for the longest time was just the Dodgers.
Right.
It wasn't a country.
Like some
did,
of the...
Did, of course, Vin Scully did national work, but
right,
this is bigger than that.
Mm-hmm. And just the calls, the Joe Sakic in 0-2 call is the one that really gets me every time, scoring that goal to make it 5-2, the Joe Sakic thing, just an incredible career. And again, yeah, the soundtrack for a lot of Canadians on Saturday night when it comes to Hockey Night in Canada. Speaking of salt,
I just love how simple it was.
Yeah.
There was no like fluff. There was no crazy inventive words. A lot of times he let the crowd breathe.
Mm-hmm.
It just, there's an art in simplicity that I think he mastered. Well,
and the call he had way back when in the 70s when the Central Red Army was playing the Flyers. And they're leaving.
Well, that's actually one that I did grow up with.
Yeah.
Did know.
They're going home as beat the hell out of the Central. And you look at some of those highlights of that game,
like,
Frank.
Literally beat the hell. Like, yeah. Scoreboard irrelevant.
Yeah.
Beat the hell out of them.
Like, these crazy bone-crushing hits that were, like, 10 seconds too late. It was incredible. Bob's like, oh, that was a pretty good check. It was great. It was great
and
watching
then,
those
guess
highlights.
Guess what? The backstory of that is amazing. That... Basically, Flyers owner Ed Snyder just went down to their locker room and said, you don't come back out, you don't get paid.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's when they put their gear back on.
Yeah. Because they're like, all right, we're going to go here and just get thumped for another period.
Well, we came all the way here. We got pounded for the first part of the game. I guess we might as well get paid.
Yep, absolutely. The old Broad Street Bullies. Wanted to ask you, you were there in Utah for the whole unveiling of the stuff. Do you like this bracket style thing challenge they're
unveiling
doing?
Unveiling of the stuff. Eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Of the players and stuff. Do you like the bracket?
excuse me. I've been incredibly sick all week. They said we were just talking about art of simplicity. And when we said art of simplicity, like that didn't include you saying unveiling of the stuff.
Yeah. Why not? Like Maddie earlier on his Rose Report said, hey, you want more of the NFL draft? Check the internet. I'm like, okay, it's a good idea. There was a lot of stuff.
I wasn't wrong.
With you, a lot of stuff being unveiled. Do you like the bracket style they're doing for the name?
That's the one part of the stuff that I don't necessarily love.
Oh, okay. Why?
What if they pick the wrong one?
What do you mean? It's the fans, though.
I know, but
so they got to live with it. Like they named the Raptors, and they got to live with that thing forever.
Yeah, I actually like the Raptors, though.
Oh, okay, especially because they beat the Sixers' ass in the playoffs every year. Am I right? Fist pump. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, talk about the
nice, settle really down. Good game.
Go ahead.
Really nailed that one.
Joel crying after game six after the four bouncer
yesterday.
From
how
Kawhi.
Are the Raptors doing?
Well, because the Raptors always beat them in the playoffs. All right, go ahead.
Jesus, sorry. George, keep it on the rails.
All right, sorry.
Well, I want to know what the eight teams are before we see the bracket. Mm. And then how do they structure the bracket to basically create a path or what they like most. I guess what I'm saying is it's going to be a little bit contrived anyway, because there's a process to get there. And then the next part is, are the votes totally transparent? And it just feels like a play for fan engagement, which of course is part of it, but just pick the damn name. Like, there doesn't need to be this whole, oh, well, we're going to be Utah, whatever, Utah Hockey Club to start the year. We have a whole month before the Thrashers relocated from Atlanta to Winnipeg. That was May 31st. They hit the ground running with a name, logo, jerseys. That, yeah, I mean, I guess you could say the Jets existed before, but they created a whole new scheme and logo. Why can't they do the same in Utah? Just there doesn't need to be this whole year waiting period, I guess is my point.
Which name do you fancy the most?
So a lot of people have been talking about the Utah Yetis. I'm down with that, but it needs to be singular, the Utah Yeti.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
There's a symmetry to it. There could be a great logo. There's a lot to like about it. Brand synergy. I'm just thinking of a cooler stacked with beer.
Not Blizzard, right? Because then if they play the Avalanche, that's just too much snow.
Blizzard doesn't really scare me either.
Exactly. Ooh, it's a blizzard. Stay
like,
inside
what is
and
a
don't
Philadelphia
drive.
Philly? Like, I need something that has some
a horse,
some juice to it. What is it? But also, what is a Washington Capital?
If you give Utah too much of a fearsome name, like it's like. Okay, you're overcompensating. Like, you're still in Utah. Like, settle down.
That's not right. What do you have against Utah? What did they do to you?
Yeah. They didn't do anything to me. But when I think about Utah, I'm not like, oh, look out for those tough, real, gnarly dudes in Utah.
All right. Our texter just said the Stormin' Mormons. What about that?
Yeah, I feel like that would be highly offensive.
Okay. Yeah, good. The Latter-day Skates. I like that one.
Oh, man.
Keep going.
What was it like just arriving there? Like, what was the reception like for the players? Is this going to work based on what you saw?
This isn't going to work. This thing is going to smash.
Ooh.
Okay. Oh.
I'm telling you, it was electric there. Fans were wrapped around the building just to get in. By the way, they did it right. Free hot dogs and sodas.
Hell yeah. I almost went.
And... oh, that's why I went. Yeah. let's be honest. So they're jacked up. Like, they did everything right. That rollout was phenomenal. And as one player texted me after the event, he just said, "We feel like we're back in the NHL."
Wow.
It echoed in there. I'm telling you, they had this chant. It was like, "Hoo-ah! Utah!" It was awesome. The whole place was electric. It was full. And I have zero doubt that this is going to be a hugely successful venture.
How aggressive are they going to be this offseason?
Well, I think whenever you have a new team in a new location, the number one goal is to win, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's been one of the key demarcations of for any franchise that's just starting out. I think the big test for them is going to be how much deviation, if any, will there be from really kind of a meticulous plan to this point by their GM and Bill Armstrong. You know, spending in free agency is one thing, but my thought process would be, what key trades can they make and leverage the picks that they have to try and help for both now and the future? You can't. They've got 20 picks in the first three rounds over the next three drafts. You can't possibly make all those picks.
What's that arena?
You don't have enough. You don't have enough contracts to sign them with the 50 contract limit.
They can definitely upgrade. Like, what is it, like 10 second round picks over the next 3 years? Like, it's a preposterously high number.
10 second round picks. I mean, it sounds crazy, but
yeah.
Look at what they did with one of those picks last year, getting Sean Durzi.
Yeah.
That's bad. A 50 point defenseman from the Kings who's 24 and a restricted free agent.
And they have all their firsts, and they're moving into a new building, and the players are feeling good about themselves. Like, what was the building like? Because we've heard it's only 12,000 seats. They're working to add some more, but how does it compare to other buildings around the NHL? And obviously, against the Mullet, it's going to be much bigger. But what was that like, the facilities?
Well, there was, yeah, that's the amazing part, right? Just one night, even with one side of the arena cordoned off, you have 3x what's in Mullet Arena. So inside, they had just kind of in the last few years finished a renovation. It's a building that's about 30 years old, so early to mid 90s. It inside feels new and modern. The concourses are great, but here's how they're going to get to 17,000. They're actually planning, it's not a new arena. They're planning a massive overhaul down to the foundation of the current one. So essentially what they're going to do is blow out some of the foundational walls and redo the entire bowl in the upper and lower so that it completely fits hockey. And so they're hoping to accomplish that in 3 off seasons. So not this one, but the next 3, that we're talking $700, $800 million overhaul. Ooh. Think like how different Madison Square Garden is, or how different in Seattle Key Arena is that the Kraken play now. It's going to be a totally different place. So that plus when you see the vision of what's kind of it's a growing but still a little bit sleepy downtown, they're going to connect the arena to an entertainment district. And I mean, going there and seeing it, you can understand why the NHL has decided to go there. Like, it makes perfect sense. Frank, and it's going to be a big hit to take out the weakest link in a 32-team chain and put in this team. Mm-hmm. It's a huge win.
Frank Cervalli, NHL Insider Daily Faceoff, brought to you by South Trail Exports, Big Show, Russick and Rose. 960 The Fan. We had this conversation in the first segment of the program. I want to get your thoughts on it. I think after last night's defeat, and this series has been super tight, Bobrovsky's been great, but to me, the championship window of the Tampa Bay Lightning is closing quickly. Your thoughts on that?
It's a really fair question because as close as the... like, I can't really remember a series that's been this close that on the scoreboard is this lopsided. Like, if you watch the games, there's really not much separating the two teams.
Yeah.
And yet they trail 3-0. And so at the end, if they get swept or they lose in 5, it's going to be hard to argue against your premise, particularly with their regular season finishes the last few years. I tend to agree with you, and I would think that after 2 cups and some of these players continuing to get longer in the tooth, that you're right. It's just that the pillars of that team are still so formidable. Like, Vasilevsky, he's been unreal the last 6 weeks. Victor Hedman played his best hockey in 3 years this year. He was 3rd on Minar's trophy ballot. I mean, did you watch Kucherov this year? Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is what you're betting against when you say that. And I go, it still feels early for me to do that.
What's the future for John Cooper? Obviously, he's a guy that, and I'm sure the Lightning see him as long as you want to be here, you're our head coach. But does it get to a point where maybe they do need a different voice to maybe try to squeeze the last drop out of that group? And obviously he'd be a guy that would be sought after by so many other teams. Like, what do you think the future holds for him?
It's possible. I think that would be a mistake. Like, I don't necessarily buy into the idea that you need a new voice. The group is different every year. He's a master psychologist and motivator. He's never really been a tactician or big X's and O's guy. That's he has other people on his staff that do that. He is the NHL's Ted Lasso. I'm not being funny when I say that.
And he has to be with Kucherov on the roster, right?
So what is changing him out going to get you?
Change for the sake of change, I guess.
And then I look at other sports and I say, why is it that there's so much more stability and tenure in their coaching positions, especially among people that have success?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't watch a ton of NBA, but I was watching the Nuggets game last night for a bit, and I was like, oh, their coach has been there 9 years?
Yeah.
And that's like a totally normal thing. How many people in the NHL, how many head coaches make it 5 years, let alone 9? It's unheard of. That guy has one title, right?
Yep.
I'm not
Mike Malone, yep.
But so but at one the same title.
Time, yeah, but to me, it's tough because in the NBA, there's only five guys, and especially in the playoffs, there's what, an 8-9 man rotation max. And if you have a superstar player, you can constantly be a team that is vying for a championship. And the X's and O's in the NBA, sure, it's important, but I don't think it's as important as bench management in the National Hockey League when you're matching lines and you're throwing guys out there. There's just more that a coach does, in my opinion, when it comes to hockey. It's not like the NFL where you're installing a game plan and that's critical to the team's success.
And you've got 16 dudes on your team staff.
Right.
So if we were to rank the four major pro sports,
yeah,
in terms of order of importance of the coach or impact of the coach or manager on game itself.
Hockey's two for me, behind football.
Okay, so it's football,
yep,
hockey,
basketball,
baseball.
Baseball's far and away fourth because those lineups are already written up by the khakis, as our Kevin Barker likes to say. That's already analytics and matchups, and that's already written into the sport. But I think it's football, hockey, basketball.
Okay. So why does Bill Belichick get 20 years worth of a run?
Multiple championships?
Yeah, it's like Bednar. He's winning.
John Cooper,
so he gets
multiple
a stick.
Championships?
Yep.
That's the question.
Mm-hmm. Stability's key. I agree with you. Stability is key. Continuity, that's a big deal. Why did the Sabres get in at Lindy Ruff?
I think Frank is getting at, what is the question? Because, like we talked about earlier in the show, I don't see Cooper going anywhere because, like you said, it's just change for the sake of change. Well, why do that?
But again, maybe he wants a different challenge. I don't know.
Well, they may do it. Look at what... okay, so Julien Brisebois, their GM...
Yeah.
Last summer, he fired their chief amateur scout. Well, I guess fired is the wrong word. He displaced him and basically said, we don't need your services anymore, but also wouldn't let him leave to go anywhere else because he was under contract. Because he said, we need a change. We got to change it up. We need a boost. We need a jolt. I think a jolt is the actual term that he used. Go look at that team's draft record, Al Murray, and what he crushed for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So maybe he does the same thing with the coaching staff. I would just ask the question, what do you think you're accomplishing?
Mm-hmm.
Because the same questions have been asked about Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh. Another guy with multiple championships there. Did these guys wake up this year and forget how to coach? Did their quote unquote message become stale?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy that.
Mm-hmm.
Most guys, they need to get changed out because they're pricks.
Yeah. I also just don't think that there's a lot of good coaches. I think it's a hard position to evaluate. Mm-hmm. And I just think that there's less good coaches than we actually think. I did want to ask you about a couple of news notes from around the playoffs, Frank, if you got any updates on these. Thatcher Demko, are we expecting to see him for the rest of the playoffs? Brock Besser also left practice on Thursday. And then if you got anything on Willie Nylander, that would be great as well.
So Thatcher Demko did travel with the team here to Nashville, where I am. And by the way, checked into the hotel last night, and big sign up that says we have an IV lounge located on the second floor. It's like, yes. Permission granted.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have some hot chicken last night?
I actually did. Nice. First stop before even leaving the airport.
Where'd you go?
Yes, you did.
Little Hattie B's hot chicken.
Nice.
The original, the classic.
Yep.
That'd be bud.
Did you get it crazy hot? Were you working up a sweat?
No, I went, there's like six rungs on the level of hell, and I went to three.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair. That's still damn spicy.
Yeah. Good place to be.
Yeah, but I told you I'm sick, so I couldn't really taste most of it, but okay. I knew it was getting hot because I was sweating. So all right. Yes. That's my version of a sauna. That's a fat guy version of a sauna.
Sweating when you eat, is that an indication to change your lifestyle? I don't know, maybe. Hey,
it's only weird if it doesn't work.
Okay.
So Thatcher Demko, look, I believe he's out for the series. I think the further, if the Canucks get into the second round, he's got a chance to play again. I did see a report yesterday that he's done for the playoffs. I don't think that's accurate. And when it comes to Nylander, I don't even know the proper way to frame it. Concussion-like symptoms. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's been ruled a concussion, but migraine, I was told, sensitivity to light. He's trying to play for game four on Saturday, but I don't think they even have a sense yet of how that's going to go one way or the other.
Is there any way Sheldon Keefe survives that if they go out this time?
I have a hard time seeing a path for it. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, a lot of that blame, if there is some, it goes right to the core.
Of course.
Like, it doesn't go any further than that. And this whole idea, if they go into next season with, or this summer, this has been their big refrain from the Leafs front office the last few years, which now spans multiple regimes, is we can't just make a trade and trade one of our star players for the sake of doing so, because in the end, it'll make our team worse.
Yeah.
You can't say that anymore. Mm-hmm. Look, the way this team fails to score when it matters most, it's crazy how lackluster they've been with their scoring. I mean, go back and look. Heading into game three, they'd played 51 playoff games in the Austin Matthews era. How many times do you think they've scored two or fewer of those 51 games?
Probably half.
Almost exactly half.
Crazy.
This is a vaunted offense, second in the league in scoring this year, and has a cap table that is incredibly top heavy. Their last 10 playoff games, 2-2-2, 2-2-2, 2-1-3-2.
Good luck, Brad.
Good luck.
Good luck, Brad. Have fun, Brad. I think once the Tavares contract is done, I think there'll be a lot more flexibility.
And he's been one of their better players in the playoffs.
Yeah.
He typically is.
But how could you possibly look at Mitch Marner this summer and say that's a guy that's going to help us win?
Mm-hmm. Sure, but also I think Austin Matthews, I think he gets a free pass for some reason, Frank.
He single-handedly won him game two.
Okay, great.
He's been their best big gun this series, and it's not close,
but
and
it's,
he's still not.
But Frank,
up to the
it's
level
about damn time.
He should be at.
Well, he was a ghost last year against the Panthers.
Yeah, but he's starting to change, and you want to rip him when the other guys haven't produced anything in the series.
He's the only guy you can't rip there right now.
Okay,
I think.
But from a guy who's seen all of his playoff games, that guy he's been a ghost for a lot of it. And he's never elevated his game like a McDavid, like a McKinnon.
He has elevated this year. This playoffs,
yes.
I think he's elevated.
About damn time, too.
But how I think this playoff, however long or short it is, has actually been instructive. Not to draw too many conclusions from three games. Mm-hmm. But again, Austin Matthews, you go into the good pile. Okay. Mitch Marner, I don't think you're redeemable.
Okay.
Is it crazy to say that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because there'll be a lot of teams lining up for Mitch Marner. That's for damn sure.
Well, of course.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So then that's advantage to the Leafs.
Yeah. It's going to be fascinating. Maybe he needs
to
get out of there.
We all want a 93 player.
Maybe it's 93 the pressure.
Point player.
He's from there. He knows what it means. Maybe that's just too much to overcome.
Grass is always greener. Try Columbus.
That could be
You can see it. You can see how much it means. His body language. I've never seen anything like it.
They traded Nazem Kadri because Nazem Kadri loved the Leafs too much and lost his head in the playoffs. That's what it was.
So you're saying he wouldn't be the first?
He would not be the first. He absolutely wouldn't be the first.
Max Domi looked exactly like that in game one, too.
Hey, real quick, is Allmark playing game four? Oh, it's his turn.
He wouldn't be if I were coaching the Boston.
But again, Browns. You're not 100%. Like, it could be Allmark, right?
Leading the playoffs in goals save above expected, .955 save percentage, and responsible for both of your team's wins.
Right.
So far.
But it's not his turn, Frank.
Well, no one said it was a strict rotation.
They don't deserve to win the series if they do that. They don't deserve it.
So, but here's what I'll say, though. I would go with Swayman for game four, but regardless of the result, I would go with Ullmark for game five.
Ooh.
Up 3-1 or tied.
Okay. But what if you got a shutout? Then you got to go Swayman again.
But no, there are no exceptions to this rule.
Okay. But they hug after the game.
It's so like that's passing a hot chicken stand. There are no exceptions.
Damn right. Frank, terrific stuff as usual. Thanks for this, sir.
See you guys.
There's Frank Saravalli, an NHL insider, brought to you by South Trail Exports. With inventory shortages across the city, it's the perfect time to sell your vehicle for cash. Visit SouthTrailExports.com. The Chronalist is here. Brent Cron next. And we'll unveil our text topic for Arkell's tickets and a ticket to the gold medal game. Like, we got lots of stuff to do in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll do that next. Big Show, Russick and Rose, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.